The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Andrew Locher. I will be your substitute host today on the Trumpet Daily. It's amazing with each passing day, the value of this program just really impacts me, and I hope it does you. Not just this program, but the other programs on KPCG. One in particular that I wanted to draw attention to, one that you're well familiar with, is the Key of David program. That's hosted, of course, by Gerald Fleury, the Pastor General of the Philadelphia Church of God. And the program has really been hitting on some very timely issues and subjects for the past several weeks. He does give us on that program a very different perspective and understanding than what you'd hear on, say, mainstream media. And even just, it's just very unique in so many different ways. I would encourage you to be a regular listener to the Key of David program. It airs all over the world on television. It's also available on our website, thetrumpet.com. And it's also available on our YouTube channel. You can just search for The Key of David with Gerald Fleury, and you'll have access to all the different programs that he's taped. Just of late, we've aired programs entitled Coronavirus and the Holy Roman Empire. That's a unique subject that you're not going to hear anywhere else. The program just from 2 weeks ago, The Missing Dimension in Afghanistan, turned out to be our third highest responding program so far this year. Another program just before that is God Blessing America and Britain. And then America's Greatest Enemy, the week before that. The week before that, the China-America clash is prophesied. So you get a sense here, if you are familiar with the Key of David program, how the material is just so timely to what's taking place in the world. Speaking in the world about the world, if you just have been watching the news, as I'm sure you have if you're listening to this program. But if you pay attention to what you've been seeing for the last year or more, it is all very troubling. We've really suffered through the consequences of the election fraud and allegations there are being made now for tampering in the California recall election with Governor Gavin Newsom. Then you have COVID and all of the associated mandates and troubles that's causing. We have the tragic fall of the United States military as a superpower and our shameful withdrawal from Afghanistan and in many ways from the Middle East in general, not to mention the tragedy of Americans left behind, allies that have been abandoned. So much is so difficult for all of us to watch, for all of us to be a part of. Nationally, there's a surge in crime. There is opioid addiction that goes largely unaddressed, although occasionally proper attention is put on that subject. There's the overall degeneration in morals, standards of living. This is a hopeless world, hopeless indeed, and perhaps no more visible, the hopelessness, than when you just drive through the streets of any big city in America. Homelessness, especially for those that are unsheltered, is a growing problem. And it's an epidemic that's about to get much worse. I'd like to play to you a short video clip here just to help illustrate that point. Clip number one, please.
567,715. That's how many homeless people the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development counted on a cold January night in 2019.
More than 500,000 Americans are homeless on any given night. But on the West Coast, the problem has grown worse in recent years.
Things haven't improved with the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. Homelessness is on the rise in America.
San Francisco is rushing to contain a coronavirus outbreak that hit its biggest homeless shelter.
The homeless population in the county is up 13% from last year, as the city of LA saw a 14% jump.
Homelessness is growing, and governments have done too little too late.
There is no doubt that the homeless are stigmatized. And all too often, we conflate the issue with mental health, or we just blame the victim.
Most people blame homelessness on the person, that it's they're a bum or they're lazy or they made bad decisions. If homelessness was a punishment for bad decisions, we'd all be homeless.
But this is a complex issue, and no two stories are alike.
They're actually a huge range of forces that often kind of come together and compound one another when it comes to how an individual falls into homelessness.
But how did we get here? How did a nation with such wealth and prosperity wind up with 500,000 people on the streets? And more importantly, what can we do about it?
Great questions. How did we get here? How is it that such a prosperous, blessed nation, a nation that should be taking better care of its people. How did we get here? As those two gentlemen said at the end, it is a complex issue. And I do think that there is, and as I'll prove to you here, there are some that have made choice to exist as they do. Maybe not in the squalor that maybe they didn't think it get to be this bad. But there are choices that we have made as a society that has brought us here. It's not just all to blame on individuals. And yes, every story is different. But what are we doing about it? It's becoming a growing epidemic, something that should cause us some concern. Let me read to you some staggering statistics. If you just pause for a moment to think of some of this. In March 2020, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or the U.S. Department of HUD, they released their annual homeless assessment report. They found 580,466 people were homeless. That's a staggering number. Now, that number is expected to increase to over 600,000 homeless by the end of 2021. But it's hard to put your finger on the exact number of homeless. And there are a lot of different reports out there to suggest that it's actually much worse. The National Coalition for Homelessness believes there's more than 1 million homeless throughout America. 1 million, that's about the size of Dallas, Texas. That's the ninth largest city in the United States. So if you just put all the homeless in one city, it would be in the top 10 as far as the number of people living in that city. 1 million people. Now, more than one half of the homeless don't have shelter. They're the homeless that are becoming more and more visible. Those that have to live on the street, those that live in tents along the highways or throughout the neighborhoods. Think of this statistic. About one out of every five homeless are children. Children. Now, the United States Department of Education, they define homelessness a little bit more broadly. And they report that there were 1.5 million homeless children during the 2017-2018 school year. How do you address something like that? Where have we gone wrong? Liberal news source CNN reported just on September 8th, 2021, they said on any given night in California, the governor's office estimates that there are about 170,000 homeless people on the streets. That's in the state of California. And as it turns out, one out of every three homeless live in California. So the governor's dealing with the problem that over 170,000 people each night are on the streets. Again, conflicting reports of who has it worse. They do say the top two cities, again, as far as population goes, New York City and Los Angeles, they are home to the largest populations of homeless. About 25% of all the homeless people live in those two cities, our two biggest cities. This crisis has really fueled the recall vote for Governor Newsom in California. It's provided fuel for that. CNN also reported in that same article, it says that Governor Newsom signed a funding package that will direct $12 billion toward addressing homelessness over the next 2 years and another $10.3 billion to building affordable housing. Politics, of course, those promises weren't fulfilled And in his defense, they can't be fulfilled. Where do you come up with that kind of money? $22 billion to take care of the homeless. And you compound that need with the reality in California where they're suffering through a staggering drought. That is definitely going to impact their economy in a bad way. You throw in COVID, the impact that has on the economy, and basically you're looking at a state and leadership that has no avenue to address this problem. Now, this really floored me. This was also in that same CNN article, and it was talking about those that do have jobs in California. How much do you think an average California resident has to earn if he wants to live in a two-bedroom apartment? Well, let's let CNN answer for us. They said a 2021 report from the National Low Income Housing Coalition found that a person in California working a 40-hour work week, just a normal work week, needs to earn $39.03 an hour to afford a two-bedroom apartment at fair market rent, making it the most expensive state to rent in the country. If that person was making the state minimum wage, which in California is $14 an hour. So if that same person just worked and earned $14 an hour, they would have to work 112 hours per week to afford a two-bedroom apartment. That's more than double time. That's almost working practically every waking hour. How did we get here? COVID has complicated matters. And I should say, really, the state of California's response and the national response, sorry, having trouble with my earpiece here, that they've really struggled with how to address this problem. What are they supposed to do? They had plans to assist low-income families. They wanted to clear the streets. And yet all of those plans had to be put on hold as they played games with shutdowns of businesses, as they locked people down, as they tried to house the COVID refugees in hotels. The economy was devastated. Bloomberg reported this on August 31st, 2021. The title of the article is LA Sheriff Predicts New Homeless Surge When Eviction Curbs End. Outspoken Sheriff Alex Villanueva suggested LA County could see a doubling in the unhoused population once the eviction moratorium ends. He said, and I quote, "We are destined to be overrun by the homeless in the next 3 or 4 years." Overrun. He said it's headed to a bad place. Now, Sheriff Villanueva has received a lot of negative publicity. The mainstream media has vilified him for working to clear the encampments along Venice Beach. They say that the sheriff is just simply pushing the problem down the street, out of his jurisdiction into somebody else's jurisdiction. And I think to a certain extent you could say, well, that is true. But then in the sheriff's defense, something has to be done. He's a sheriff dealing with escalating violent crime, especially in that area, a 60% surge in homicides just this year alone. Now, he was elected to work as sheriff to mitigate crime, to address crime, to enforce the laws. And what you find actually is that the laws of man are actually making things worse. It's not just in California. It's in almost every big city. Savannah, Georgia, the other side of the United States, the mayor there said this pandemic has exposed every vulnerability in our social welfare system. It's not just the pandemic. Don't you think we could step back and say that our whole socialist approach to governance is starting to unwind? That we're starting to face the consequences, again, not just caused by a pandemic, maybe made worse by a pandemic or made worse by the government response to the pandemic. These are big, complex problems, as was brought out in that video clip that we watched. Some of the homelessness is driven by mental illness. Others are forced onto the streets by financial ruin. Perhaps their businesses were closed. Maybe their businesses simply floundered or didn't work. Others suffer through court judgments that force them onto the street. There's despair. There's just a sad fact that people are losing the will to fight. It is hard work to get out there and work. It is hard to survive and thrive in this society. And it does feel like it's becoming more and more oppressive with additional burdensome laws and rules and regulations, more money being spent, money that we don't have. And if you look at just cause and effect, as that video showed, what is bringing all this about? We think we have all the solutions. We think we're getting better. This society is evolving, right? Well, I think we're seeing the fruits that it's actually just to the contrary. There is a tremendous financial burden on society. And again, I think most of us don't look at homelessness out of a financial concern only. You do have concern about the health and well-being, especially of the children, but those that are living on the streets. You want them to have an inspiring life, one where they can aspire to greatness. And yet day after day, they struggle. As I said, it's not a problem just on the West Coast or just on the East Coast. Here's a report from the Denver Post about the city of Denver. They say across the Denver metropolitan area, per capita spending on people experiencing homelessness ranged from $32,000 to $79,000 per year. So that's per homeless person per year. The city of Denver is spending anywhere from $30,000 to $80,000 per person to deal with the issue. And who's paying for that? Is it making things better? The city of Denver is being accused now of running a PR campaign. They're trying to improve their image, so say some of the critics, and push the homeless out of Venice Beach, push them out of Denver, Colorado, let somebody else deal with those problems. But the problem is nobody is dealing with the problems. Nobody is working toward a solution. Now, God never intended for mankind and for population to suffer like this. Rather, I think we go through these plagues because of the choices we make as a whole. Yeah, that's right. We're all responsible for the way we conduct our lives, the rejection of God, and I'll address that even in the second part of today's program. God does intend to work with individuals. God does have mercy and compassion. God is a God of judgment. Now, the Bible's solutions to these horrific problems will include a radical change in government, a very different law. Society is going to have to change. The solutions are there. They've actually been written down in the Bible for decades, for millennia. But nobody wants to listen to those, at least not yet. So God calls for a wholesale change of government and an entirely new law. But it's not a heavy-handed law. It's not an oppressive government, one that imposes mandates and restrictions and dictates every little step in life. No, this government is going to inspire work. It will teach work ethic. It will encourage productivity. It will celebrate achievement. God forbids the use of mind-altering drugs. Mankind has a certain lust for those substances in some ways. And that problem is making things worse. That won't be allowed in God's new society. Now, these are not easy solutions to implement. It's not going to be easy. But the solutions are there. It's going to require will of the people. It will require submission. God's holy day plan, if you know much about it, starts with the Passover. It starts with the ultimate sacrifice that the God family could make for us, a powerful witness to their love, their mercy. They created mankind to flourish, to actually become God. And so the whole plan of God, the whole Holy Day program starts with the Passover to demonstrate to us the sacrifice that must be made to bring about solutions. Now, as you progress through the Holy Days, you come now close to the time that we're celebrating. In fact, we just celebrated the Day of Atonement. And on that Holy Day, God holds Satan the devil accountable for causing mankind to end where we are. We have a great booklet. You see it advertised on your screen there if you're watching the video. Pagan Holidays or God's Holy Days, which? God tells us all about the solutions that he has. But the great thing about God is he doesn't mandate. He doesn't threaten employment or threaten vacation time or threaten anything. God requires us to choose. We have to make personal choice. And that's our course of action today. I watched a very brief interview with former president, or President Ronald Reagan. This is back in February 1984, and he was being interviewed by the television morning show, Good Morning America. It's an ABC television production. And the interviewer was asking him about his administration's, quote, favoring the rich over the poor. And it was a rather pointed interview. And I was really quite impressed with just the frank response that the president gave. They did address the issue of homelessness. And I really appreciated his assessment about a portion of those that were on the streets. He said, and I quote, "What we have found in this country, and maybe we're more aware of it now, is one problem that we've had even in the best of times, and that is the people who are sleeping on the grates or in the streets, the homeless, who are homeless, you might say, by choice." Can you imagine a president today being able to make that kind of a conclusive statement that there are some that are homeless because they choose to be that way? That is their decision. White House spokesman Anson Franklin, he made some comments after this interview, and he said that there are some studies that show that as much as 25% of homeless refuse help from government agencies. So maybe up to 1 out of 4 would rather remain in those conditions than to accept the help. Again, it's complicated. I don't have a single sentence, one word answer to solve all these problems. I'm not encouraging the homeless to remain in a social welfare type of situation. It's just very interesting to step back and look. Now, President Reagan also said in that same interview that the problem with homelessness has been aggravated by some of the new laws requiring mental institutions to release disturbed persons when they have no place to go. We see that today. We see the consequences of overcrowded jails. We're living through the surge in crime by releasing those that haven't really paid a penalty for the offenses they've committed. There's no place to put them. And then politicians like to play the games with COVID and all of that. And so we see a feeding of the crime problem. Not any solution, just pushing it to another county. Policies, assistance that the government has provided for has only made the problem worse. That's where we are in society. What does God have to say? God does understand that even with hard work, people sometimes make bad decisions. Remember, there was that individual that said, you know, if we all made bad decisions and the consequences were homelessness, then we'd all be homeless. Well, yes and no. And God knows that we can make terrible decisions. We've perhaps done that sometimes in our lives. And yet God's plan allows for the Jubilee year. And I'm not going to get into all of that now. My point is, you can study, I think it's in Leviticus 25, about the Jubilee, about the way that God prevents a perpetual cycle of family desperation and hopelessness. God is a God of mercy and judgment. He does hold us accountable for the decisions we make. We do suffer consequences when we make bad decisions. In addition, King Solomon said, quote, "Time and chance happens to them all." That's in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 11. So circumstances can bring somebody into a condition of poverty. Absolutely. There's no question about that. God is aware of that. But I think in a lot of ways, if you just consider time and circumstances, something just happening to you at random, I'd say that's pretty unlikely as a cause for homelessness. And yet God's law still makes provision for that. God still works to address that problem. One of our writers, a minister in the church, Robert Morley, he wrote an article in the Trumpet magazine in 2016. And the title of his article was, "Is God a Socialist?" It's a great read. You can find that article on our website, thetrumpet.com. Now, God did not create us to suffer. God did not create us to stagger around, to simply exist in hopelessness without purpose. And yet you find circumstances today, you find causes today, whether it be terrible laws and rules, bad decisions, economic crises, health trials, mental health issues, somebody that became addicted to drugs, all of those different problems. What we're seeing is a growing number of the population being forced onto the streets. We can't ignore it. We can't just keep pushing it to somebody else's county. And the devastating thing, at least to me, is as you watch this situation unfold before us, is the involvement of children. 20% of the homeless are growing up without a stable home, without a proper environment to really develop and nurture the mind. And so as you'd expect, the problems will only get worse. There's an Old Testament prophet, Micah, and he spoke of a new world. And part of his prophecy that does really inspire, you'll recognize the words when I read them here in a moment. But Micah talked about individual land ownership, personal responsibility, and the satisfaction that comes with it. The prophecies about the world tomorrow are not so much about communism. In fact, it's not about communism. It's not about handouts. It's about opportunity to excel, to grow. Think of these beautiful words from Micah's prophecy. This is Micah chapter 4 and verse 1. It says, "But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Eternal shall be established in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and the people shall flow unto it." Here's a government that causes people to come. And what do they come for? Do they come for handouts? Do they come to perpetuate a lifestyle that's not good for them? Verse 2 says, "Many nations shall come and say, Come, and let us go up to the mountain of the Eternal and to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth out of Zion, and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem. And he shall judge many people and rebuke strong nations afar off, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. But they shall sit every man under his vine and under his fig tree, and none shall make them afraid, for the mouth of the Eternal has spoken it." Right? This is a prophecy from God. This is sure to happen. God's solution involves education. God's solution involves learning how his ways work. That's what we should be most interested in. Learning to walk in his paths, choosing to walk in his paths. And then the consequence or the fruit of that is to have this prosperity. God has big plans for mankind, huge, inspiring plans that are about to become reality. And for that plan, for that future, we can all be very thankful. Well, I want to take a short break now. And when I come back, I want to discuss with you the prospect of a really exciting science project, the intention to put into orbit another space telescope. My question is, will it ever make it to orbit? We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advance news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. Trumpet Daily.
Well, thank you for joining us today on the Trumpet Daily. As you know, we love to hear feedback from you, any comments you might have. You can email those to td@thetrumpet.com. td@thetrumpet.com. Tell us what you think. We really enjoy hearing from you. Well, our second to last issue of the Trumpet magazine, the title, this is the September issue, September 2021. The lead article is The Tyranny of Science. It was written by Stephen Fleury. It's a great article. In fact, the whole issue is really fascinating. We've had some great comments from individuals that really appreciate the articles. One of the articles in there that caught my attention, that I do teach a science class here at our college, and I enjoy what mankind does in space. There was an article written in there by Mr. Harley Breath. He directs our call center here. He's also an instructor at our schools. He wrote an article entitled, At the Verge of the Impossible, or At the Verge of Impossible, and it's about the James Webb Space Telescope. His article has a lot of interesting scientific facts, and I find those interesting. Some others maybe not so much. But really, the whole story, if you see beyond some of the scientific detail, the story really is inspiring. The James Webb Space Telescope is the much-anticipated replacement for the Hubble Space Telescope, which is aging. It does have its limitations. And so there's great expectation for the James Webb. I'd like to just play for you just a short video clip about this space telescope just to help you appreciate the magnitude of this project. Clip 3, please.
This is the largest, most complex, and challenging space telescope ever constructed. It will change our understanding of the universe and our place in it. The James Webb Space Telescope. Equipped with the largest primary mirror ever to be flown in space at 6.5 meters, it's more than 6 times the size of the Hubble Space Telescope primary mirror. The James Webb Space Telescope is your telescope. Use it to explore, to challenge theories, to see sights yet unseen. It's yours to unfold the beauty and mystery in the universe and our place in it.
I do get inspired when I see clips like that. It's really a fascinating project. If you have any kind of interest in science, in engineering and technology, just putting something that large into space and placing it in an orbit, as I'll talk about later, that is so much further away from the planet than anything we've really ever done before as far as keeping a telescope out in space that far away. It's just really a tremendous story, and it was really inspired by previous discovery. I messed up my clips a little bit, so Parker Campbell, who's been kind enough to help me with preparing everything today, if you can, you could just go ahead and run that other clip, clip number 2. There's no audio to this clip, but as you're watching this picture here, it also struck me this morning, I should have asked him to play it in reverse. but in 1995, astronomers turned the Hubble Space Telescope to a part of the sky that they thought was absolutely empty. It looked black to them. They didn't think they'd find any stars in this space. And so they trained the Hubble Space Telescope. You've probably heard this story before. for 10 solid days to get an exposure of what they expected to be an empty exposure, empty slate. And the result, as you saw at the beginning of this video, the result was a spectacular vision of what they believe were 3,000 different galaxies. It's a brilliant kaleidoscope of color, different patterns. Now, the image had to be colorized by engineers. And again, you can get into all the details of that later if you're so interested. But as a reminder, a typical galaxy is home to 100 million to 100 billion different stars. So each galaxy has between 100 million and 100 billion different stars. And in this spot of the space that astronomers looked at that they thought was empty, they found 3,000 of these galaxies. You could do the math. That is basically 300 trillion possible stars. If there are 10 planets around a star somewhat similar to our current solar system or our solar system, you would end up with 3 quadrillion planets. That's in the emptiness of space, where they looked and said, well, there's nothing there. Let's just put a telescope on there for 10 days just to make sure. It's hard to believe there's nothing in space. And what they found was mind-staggering. What is the lesson? I think one of the lessons for mankind is that God has so much out there, so much more that's beyond our ability to detect. Where we see emptiness, God sees opportunity. Where we can't count one thing because we can't detect it, God peppers it with 300 billion stars, 3 quadrillion planets, perhaps, something up to that nature. And so this deep field image that Hubble captured, within a year, it inspired scientists to say, we need to build something bigger and better, a new space telescope, a telescope that detects light and electromagnetic radiation in a different wavelength. And so within a year, plans were underway, construction began on the James Webb, and it's a superior instrument, no doubt. And it should be able to detect more distant stars, as was alluded to in the video. Some of the discoveries remain unknown. And I think that's what excites me the most. Just like their findings in the deep field. What else is out there that we don't know, that we can't perceive? Now, we have 3, I think, outstanding astronomy textbooks that we'd love to send you. The Philadelphia Church of God has a lot to say about science. I'll mention those titles. Well, I'll just give them to you now. The first is Our Universe Potential. I keep changing things up on Parker Campbell, so sorry, Parker. The first book that we have is Our Universe Potential. It's a beautiful color book. It contains a lot of science. It's easy to read and study. I consider it a textbook. We also have another book, Does God Exist? We'll keep Mr. Campbell busy here. Does God Exist? This is a simple little science textbook from Herbert Armstrong. It's probably less than 10, 15 pages. Beautiful logic, very inspiring. And lastly, The Incredible Human Potential. I feel like I'm making Parker run laps around the parking lot here. The Incredible Human Potential, written by Herbert W. Armstrong. And that book was written back probably, 50 years ago. And so inspiring, 40, 50 years ago. I don't know exactly off the top of my head here. I really strongly encourage you to read those different textbooks. I do so because they expand on what you read in the Bible. In Psalm 19, perhaps one of the most frequently cited verses, especially with regard to science and especially for astronomy, Psalm 19, verse 1 says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork." God put all of that out there for us to observe. They declare his existence. They speak to our future. What will this new $10 billion telescope that was supposed to be launched in 2007, what will it see? I'm excited. At the time, the Trumpet magazine, this particular issue, the one I mentioned before, the Tyranny of Sirens, that same article in there, they told us to be watching for the launch of the James Webb in October. Well, that's now been pushed back again. And if you've followed the James Webb, you're used to these delays. It's been pushed back till December 18th. That is the proposed launch date. It's an international project that involves scientists from NASA, from the European Space Agency, the Canadian Space Agency, all of these different countries coming together. And you can understand why. The achievements, the images we receive from these beautiful telescopes are just absolutely breathtaking. Now, I wanted to turn your attention to something and ask, do you think the James Webb Space Telescope will ever make it to its final orbit? I don't know, but I'm going to suggest a few things to you that I think gives us reason to call that into question. Just shipping the assembled telescope, they put it together obviously in a warehouse type environment, and they had to move it from that assembly location to the launch location. And to do so, they did it all in secrecy. It was all hidden from the public's view because they had concern of sabotage or piracy. Somebody actually hijacking the James Webb on the way to hold it ransom, or maybe some other nefarious act to destroy it. Just how evil is mankind? Well, I think it goes beyond that. I think Satan hates the thought of the hope and the imagery that this telescope will share with us. Mr. Gerald Fleury taped a Key of David program back in 2013, and he was talking about the Hubble Space Telescope, and he said, "I strongly believe that God had a hand in the success of the Hubble Space Telescope." Now, that particular instrument came online around the same time that the Philadelphia Church of God resumed the work of Herbert W. Armstrong. God had raised the ruins through his church, and really the world was in a very dark place, especially the spirit world, and especially as you looked at God's church. It had transitioned from Philadelphia to Laodicea, and God's church was in rebellion against him, and God was bringing solutions, and only a fraction of his church responded. But could it be that God allowed for the Hubble telescope to re-inspire us about our future in space, to capture all of those images? I think so. Now, I wonder with the James Webb, if there's time left, if you're familiar with our teachings, you know we're in the last hour. Is there time left for a deeper view into space? How far are we from a real serious transition? I think they're intriguing questions. One of the thoughts that came to mind in preparing this message was, with this new powerful telescope, we would see things that we've never been able to see before. In the history of mankind, never seen it. And that begs the question, is mankind ready? Are we ready to see some of these things for the first time? I'll give you a little historical context to help explain what I'm talking about here. I'll take you back to the time of Noah. And then after that, we'll talk about the Tower of Babel, just real briefly. If you have your Bible and if you're interested, you could read the account in Genesis chapter 6. Genesis 6 and verse 5 says, "And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." This was God's assessment of mankind leading up to the great flood of Noah's day. Just pure, unadulterated evil. And it sickened God. Nobody was looking to God. Nobody had time for God. They lived in a sick and dying society. And Jesus Christ said in the Olivet prophecy that just before he returns, those same conditions would prevail in our society. And isn't that what we see today in the homelessness, the COVID, the mandates, the military withdrawal, the surrendering, all of these terrible, terrible problems? And again, those are just some of the consequences. What about the cause? What about all of the sick pathologies that emanate out of the nations of Israel? Pornography and drug addiction and all of those other sick problems. Could it be that God says the wickedness of this society was so great, or is so great, that every thought is only on evil continually? God flooded Noah's world, as we're well familiar with that reality. And that effectively stopped the evil. But human nature being what it is, under the influence of Satan the devil, mankind came roaring back after Noah's flood, fixated now on preventing God from being able to stop their technology again. And so they began construction on the Tower of Babel, a symbol that later became an idolatrous symbol, something to be worshipped. They recognized it as their tower of refuge. Science, they would say. They were unified in their science. They're unified in their language and their technology. Genesis 11 in verse 6, talking about the time around the Tower of Babel. It says, "And the Eternal said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language, and this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do." Think about what God says there. Well, their science was progressing society. Their technology, as they used their godlike minds, now again, they were influenced by the devil, but God has empowered us with tremendous minds. And God says, well, if they achieve this, then there's really nothing that's going to be held back from them. So again, God disrupted their science, their technology. He confounded the language, as we're well familiar with. Excuse me. They couldn't really communicate one with another, and that slowed down their technological drive. It did slow things down. Now, we don't have time today to go through all the scriptures. I'd love to. Psalm 139, I'll just remind you to perhaps write that down and look at it later. God makes the point there that he's well aware of our thoughts, our intentions. The psalmist there says, well, God's everywhere. He knows everything that we're doing. He knows our every step, our thought. He knows what we want to do with the James Webb. And I think it's noble. I think it's brilliant. And in a lot of ways, I hope it works, because I want to see what we haven't seen before. Everything around us, as God said in Psalm 19:1, everything declares his glory, whether it be from the magnitude of the universe down to the microscopic living cell. So much to inspire us. God tells us in Romans chapter 1 that he did that purposefully. He wants us to discover. He wants us to learn and observe and see his hand in creation. That's our solution. That's our home. Romans 1 and verse 20. It says, "For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools." Here we have all of this evidence before us of a wonderful, benevolent Creator God. But mankind just refuses to acknowledge God, refuses to respect God. And it leads to foolishness. You see, if God shows us images like the deep field, if he allows us to peer inside the building blocks of life, if man cannot, after seeing those incredible things, if man cannot acknowledge God, what else can God do? What else can he do? He's given us ample proof. How else can he reach us? I personally think God would love to share even more with us, but we just simply aren't ready. In that Psalm 139, verse 6, it says, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain unto it." God's thinking, God's mindset, his creation is just too much for us. He does share with us, I think, some really inspiring truths, some great hope. He does allow us to see things that just boggle our minds. And it's interesting, as we study the natural world around us, we pattern our technology after what we see. We're not capable of out-creating or out-producing God. We're not in competition with God. We shouldn't be. God says all of that is there to prove that I'm here. And if we can accept that, And if we can accept God's ways and his laws, then we start to see solutions coming about to problems like homelessness or surviving the troubles that face mankind today. All of those solutions are there, as I said before. They've been in print for millennia. We just have to acknowledge God. We just have to look to God. God's thoughts are so precious. They're too numerous for us, as it says in the next verse. We won't read that now. So I got to wondering if mankind is even capable of handling the imagery that we would see from the James Webb Space Telescope. Have we really earned that? Has our abandonment of God, our running the opposite direction of God as far as science and technology, even in politics, in just general conduct in life, if we're running away from God, should he reward us with those inspiring images? If we continue to reject him, is he on the hook to allow for us to see things that are simply maybe just too wonderful for us? I don't know. I really don't know. Will the James Webb Space Telescope make it to its planned orbiting holding position of 1 million miles away from Earth? Will that really ever be achieved? That's quite a technological feat. And again, as you study into the magnificent science behind that telescope, you could just marvel at mathematics and physicists and astronomers that can calculate all of these numbers and place that beautiful instrument in just a perfect orbital position to see things that we've never seen before. Our astronomy textbooks that we offer you, those three books I mentioned, you know, in a sense, they allow you to see even deeper in space than what the James Webb Space Telescope will allow for. That's how Mr. Breth ended his article. And I thought it was a profound point. We don't need a space telescope to understand the stars and the universe out there. God explains it all to us in the prophecies of our Bible. We have books that help us understand that better. God does respect those that look to him. And if we respect God, if we show God proper favor and just recognize how little we are compared to him, think of what he can open up to us. I'll just make this one suggestion. You know, one simple failure of one of the many thousands of operations that are required to put that $10 billion telescope into orbit, just one failure could likely cause the entire mission to fail. 25 years worth of man's efforts, $10 billion worth of cost could all easily just be vaporized. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I do hope it launches in December. I do hope it makes orbit. I'm not looking for, and I don't want to see the telescope be evaporated or just explode, vaporized. I don't want to see that. Rather, I'd love to see God's creation. But we have to ask that question, can mankind handle it? I think it's an interesting question to meditate upon. Anyway, I encourage you to read our books, to study your Bible, to be inspired the way God wants you to be inspired. The answers are there. God doesn't fail. He hasn't changed. You wouldn't be the first person on the planet to ask about the purpose of those stars, the future of that universe. Why is it there? Why is God showing us more? How come he gave us the Hubble Space Telescope at a time of deep spiritual trouble within his church? God has a home for us. It's beyond the planet's surface. God wants us to get out there and explore. Our future is in the stars. God wants us to understand. God wants us to put our hope in those, to trust him with our future. That is our home. Well, we're out of time today. I'd like to thank you for joining us on the Trumpet Daily. Hope you have a really inspiring week.